Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Cookie Cast. Today on Cookie Cast, it's the football podcast, and we're a man down. It happens. It happens. Every now and then, once in a while, once in a blue moon, it happens. But when there's one man gone, three men step up to take on the challenge of navigating the sometimes murky waters of football, the football world. And, you know, I think we do a good job. Keep that ship on the right path. Before we get started, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. And, share the podcast around, people. That's what it's all about. Share the podcast around. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is Cookie Cast, the football podcast.
Recording in progress.
Well, yes, quite. Welcome on along, ladies and gentlemen, to your weekly fix of football-based nonsense brought to you by us here at the Cookie Cast Podcast Network. For those of you watching on YouTube, you'll notice that one of the usual smiling faces is not sat in front and staring back at you. Unfortunately, Mr. Moore, AWOL this week. Well, not AWOL, because he didn't really need permission to go anywhere, because he's a grown man. But he is off gallivanting, doing other things, and is unable to join us this week. So, in a change to previous weeks where he's not been involved, he has sent forth his predictions for next week's games. So, we'll at least have some extra predictions to go through when we get to next week's games. But we'll start by welcoming in the other two people who are here, Mr. Cook and Mr. Womansey. How are we doing this week, gents?
Alright. Middling.
That may or may not give you a flavour of the game of the week, which was the last game that we'll cover from week 36 fixtures. The starting fixture of week 36 was Andrew's team of Manchester City travelling to Sellers Park to take on Crystal Palace. And this one started in a rather strange fashion, in the fact that Man City found themselves 1-0 down after 4 minutes. Man City actually started on the front foot, probably should have taken the lead, but it was actually Palace who broke on the counter and opened the score in 4 minutes from a Jean-Philippe Mateta goal. Obviously, he must have listened to the podcast in the previous weeks and took umbrage to the fact that we were calling him out for being a terrible, terrible striker. And took his revenge by, of course, scoring against the best team in Europe currently. They're the world, dare I say. One did not become two. It became 1-1 on the 13th minute when Kevin De Bruyne picked up the ball on the left-hand side and decided to cut it inside and unleash an absolute thunderbolt into the top corner. Wasn't no stopping that, kids. Let's put it that way. But it stayed 1-1 all the way up until the second half. So Palace managed to get in at half-time 1-1. But in the second half, City made it 2-1 with a Rico Lewis finish after 47 minutes. Erling Haaland got in on the act on the 66th minute to make it 3-1. Kevin De Bruyne finished off the Man City scoring with his second on the 70th minute to make it 4-1. But Palace decided to get a goal back. Odson Edouard, who also must have been listening to the podcast the other week where we dissed all of the Palace strikers, and decided that he too can actually finish with a lovely little deft sort of touch across with the ball that came across and just managed to sort of nick in front of the defender to just knock it out with the keeper's reach in the far corner. That was on the 86th minute, so a little nervy sort of 5 minute period for the end of the game for Man City. But they did hold on to record a 4-2 victory. And points-wise for the podcast, we all had the Man City win. Sadly, none of us had 4-2 in the scoring, so no double points there. Andy had 2-0 to City, with Alvarez and Haaland to score. So 1 point for Haaland's goal there. I had 3-0 City, with goals for Foden, who didn't even play, Silva, who also may not have played. Let me just double check. I don't think he did. He did not. Oh, he came on in the 93rd minute. So had a real influence on that game. So two of my goal scorers didn't even play, pretty much, Foden and Silva, but Haaland very much did. Stuart might have broke off the 3-1 wins for Manchester City. Stuart got Ayew to score for Palace, Silva, Foden and Haaland. So in the same boat as himself. Matt had gone 3-1 with Eze to score for Palace, Foden and Doku and Haaland. So after one game, we all have 2 points on the board. Our second game takes us into a different country. The capital of Wales, Cardiff City versus Hull City. I can only presume that you were in attendance for this one, Mr. Woodman. Family trip to Wales, yeah?
No, actually, we were on a family trip, but we were on the way back from Northampton, not from Wales. However, we did listen because we got into the range of Radio Humberside during the time that the game was on, which was good. So we did have a little bit of football action in the car. However, I should note at this point, my wife hates it when we listen to football in the car, and I'm driving. Because I'm pretty sure that if a goal happens, she just fears for her life. And it's always that point of, we're about 5 minutes into the match and the commentary's on, and she's like, oh, no. Like, she remembers that she's made a mistake. But anyway, it was a nice drive home for me. Probably slightly more scary for her, as Hull actually won 3-1. The statistics had this down as a fairly even game, but the commentary made it sound like it was pretty much all Hull. Omer was bright once again, forced an early save and hit the post in quick succession in the first half. But the first goal came from a corner from City's right-hand side. The defender tried to flick it up and out, and he ended up just sort of looping it over his own box, and Fabio Cavallio just watched it drop all the way and hit it on the volley, and it sort of didn't really even touch the floor, but it must have only been about like maybe 3 or 4 centimetres above the grass. It just sort of skimmed its way through. It was really, really well taken. But then 1-0 turned to 2-0 with the same goal scorer, Cavallio, notching a second. The City have been, as we've said before, trying to play out from the back all season. It's how Rossini wants to play. This was the prime example of what this looks like when it works. Started with a goalkeeper, God knows how many passes, but Cardiff just couldn't get anywhere near him. It ended up going centrally with almost a through ball to the edge of the area. Cavallio smacked it into pretty much the exact same place that his first effort had gone. So that was 2-0, half time. Unfortunately, it didn't. 2-0 didn't turn to 3-0. It did go to 2-1 as Grant scored for Cardiff, with Ryan Alsop getting beaten on his near post for the second time in 2 games. So fans not necessarily happy about that one. Just when it could have turned a little bit sort of sketchy, as it tends to do for Hull. 2 minutes after the goal, Hull actually scored again and made it 3-1. Philogene latched onto a bit of a loose back pass, nicked it off a defender, but still had about a third of the pitch to run. Tried to make it slightly more complicated for himself by almost allowing a defender to get back in his line, but did manage to slot home just before he got caught up. So yeah, quite happy. 3-1, and still within a shout of playoffs at that point in time, because of getting them 3 points. So yeah, not a bad Saturday's outing, all in all.
Hmm. So, a 3-1 Hull City win, which is not what Mr. Woodmansey had predicted. He had gone for a 1-0 at Cardiff win with Mate to score the goal. So, no points for Mr. Woodmansey from that game. The rest of us have very sensibly all gone for Hull wins. I've gone for 1-0 with Philogene. Points all across the board there. 2 points, as it were. Andy had also gone 1-0. Philogene. 2 points for Mr. Cook there. Matt had gone 2-1 to Hull. So very, very close to getting 2 points. He had Perry NG to score for Cardiff. And a goal piece for Zaruri and Carvalho for Hull. So he also managed to bag himself 2 points from that game. So two games in. Stu on 2 points. The rest of us on 4 points. Our third game of the week saw my lot Middlesbrough taking on the other Welsh team in the division, Swansea City. And this one seemed to start in the way that most games at the Riverside seem to start at the minute. Middlesbrough on the front foot, as tends to be the case. They're in a bit of a they're in the best stretch of form of the season. They went into this one 6 games unbeaten, and they actually managed to take the lead fairly early in the first half. Let me just double check. Was it fairly early? No, it wasn't fairly early. It was literally 1 minute before the end of the second half. So quite the opposite, in fact. There was a couple of chances in the first half either way, but the deadlock was broken, like I say, in the 45th plus one minute when Isaiah Jones had the ball on the right-hand side, crossed the ball in. The keeper came to claim, but could only spill the piping hot ball that had been zipped in at probably about 8 miles per hour from the right wing. Latte Lath was quick as a flash onto it, as quick as he could. He kind of picked it up in the 6-yard box and then almost turned away from the goal and did a huge, he did his best tanker impression. You know, huge turning circle to get himself to the edge of the box where he was basically just trying to get the ball out of his feet. But did eventually get it onto his left foot and managed to strike it in the bottom right-hand corner. On second glances, I was trying to check this out. It still went down as Latte last goal. But it does look as if it's come back off the post and hit the keeper on the line. But I think it was debatable as to whether the spin of the ball was going to go in anyway. So it has gone down as Latte last goal. So for the book, we're going to give it to Latte. They did actually manage to make it 2 in the 79th minute when Finn Azaz got onto the ball just outside of the centre circle. It slipped a little pass into Latelas again on the edge of the box on his left foot. He chopped back onto his right, sat the defender down, and then just arched a lovely curling one, sort of like started it out outside the post. Just that lovely sort of faded back in finish to take the keeper completely out of the game to make it 2-0. And that's how the game finished. 2-0 to the Borough. Very happy. Another clean sheet to, as Mr. Woodmansey said, keep the outside shot of the playoffs very much alive for Borough at this time. You'll be happy to know, points across the board on this one, as we all had varying degrees of the Middlesbrough win. Myself, Stu and Matt had all gone 2-1. We all had Latte Laugh to score. I had Barlaser or Barlasser. Stu had Azaz. Matt had Greenwood for the second goal. And then obviously our Swansea goal score is out irrelevant as they didn't score. So 2 points apiece for myself, Stu and Matt. Mr. Cook had gone for a 2-0 Middlesbrough win. 2 points there. He also had Greenwood to score, similar to Matt. But he also had Latte Laugh to score. So bagged himself another bonus point from goal score there, bagging himself 3 points for the week. Our fourth game was involving Mr. Muller's team. I've almost done it again.
Mr. Muller's team. And this is why he's not here, ladies and gentlemen.
Seriously, I never do it when he's sat there and he can whip a carpet tile at my head or something like that. So, yes, Mr. Muller's team against Tottenham Hotspur at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. That stadium's been open a long time. You would have thought they would have agreed to the sponsorship deal by now. But, alas, it's still known as the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Not an ideal start for Forest on this one. They found themselves 1-0 down to an own goal, no less, within 15 minutes. Timo Werner ended up with the ball down the left-hand side, whipped one of those crosses in where the defender's in a bit of a no-win situation heading towards his own goal. If he gets a touch on it, it's probably going to go in his own net. If he leaves it, the guy that's coming behind him is going to sweep it home. But it was, unfortunately, Murillo who was on the wrong end of the cross and slipped it into his own net. Forrest did make it 1-1 on the 27th minute when Anthony Elanga found himself down the right-hand side and whipped the ball in for Chris Wood to finish first time past the keeper, gave him no chance to make it one apiece. It should have been 2-1 to Forrest when a shot was parried by the keeper straight back into Wood's path, and he tried to absolutely, I can't remember which podcast it was I was listening to, but they questioned why he tried to take the absolute leather off the ball rather than just passing it in. He absolutely smashed it against the post from 2 yards out. Oh my word, a horrendous miss. And it did end up costing Forest in the end, as they found themselves 2-1 down in the 52nd minute when Mickey van der Ven scored. The ball had been sort of pinging around the edge of the box, worked its way across from the right to the left, where Son played it into van der Ven's path. And to be fair, he absolutely smashed it into the top of the roof of the net. It was a lovely finish by van der Ven. And the icing put on the cake, so to speak, by Spurs in the 58th minute when Pedro Porro scored. James Maddison, who at this time was very lucky to be on the pitch, as I believe he slapped someone or headbutted someone or punched someone at some point during the game and didn't get red carded. And I don't know if it went to VAR and he got away with it or if it just never got picked up by the VAR. But yeah, James Maddison was down the left-hand side, clipped the ball in, where Benton Kerr got a header on it and just sort of cushioned it in the path of Pedro Porro, who slammed over about 12 yards out. Keeper had no chance on that one. And yeah, it just petered out to a 3-1 Spurs win, sadly for Forest. Coupled with Luton's win on Saturday, that brings Luton back level on points with Forest at the bottom of the league. So makes the relegation situation a lot more interesting, shall we say. Andy had gone for a 2-0 Forest win on this one, so sadly only gets a point for the fact that he had Wood to score for Forest. Stuart and Matt had both gone for 2-1 Spurs wins. They both had Maddison and Johnson to score. Matt had Elanga to score for Forest, whereas Stu had Wood. So Stu does get himself a bonus point for his Wood there. I, however, had gone for a 3-1 Tottenham win, so I get 2 points for the correct scoreline there. Sadly, I didn't have any of the Tottenham goal scorers. I had Son, Johnson and Kulusevski, but I did have Wood as well. So I managed to get myself a bonus point there. So after four games, I find myself on 9 points. Stu finds himself on 6 points. Matt finds himself on 7 points. And Andy finds himself on 8 points. Who will take more points when we get to our fifth game of the week, which involves Andrew's team, Manchester City, away in Madrid to take on Real Madrid in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. We'll cover that game momentarily when we come back, but we are just going to take a small break. Don't go anywhere, though. It'll just pop straight back up for you. Tuesday.
Recording in progress.
And just like that, we're back at it. So, yes, Real Madrid versus Andy's team, Manchester City, the first leg of their quarter final in the Champions League. It could not have started any better for City after they took the lead in the second minute. A Bernardo Silva free kick that I imagine if the Real Madrid training staff are going through the video next week, I imagine they'll be telling the goalkeeper, can you maybe watch your near post next time, Chiefs? As instead of going over the wall or round the wall this way, Bernardo Silva decided to go round the wall the other way and stuck it in the keeper's near side.
Ryan Alsop's greatest hits for the last 3 weeks,
well, it is. Well, maybe that is it. He's just a diehard Ryan Alsop fan. And he's wanted to sort of, like, you know, pay tribute to his favourite.
His childhood hero.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So, yeah, great start for City, 1-0. However, 14 minutes later, they found themselves not level, but 2-1 down. The first, a very unfortunate deflection of Ruben Dias for an own goal. I believe it was it Camavinga that had the shot?
Yeah.
I think. And it just caught Dias and just completely changed the flight of the game, took Ortega completely out of the game. And that was the equaliser. The second is going down as a Rodrigo goal, but this also took a deflection off. Akanji? Was it Akanji that was playing right back?
I think it was now that you said that. I did watch some of this.
Yeah, I think it was Manuel Akanji that was playing at right back. And it's another one where he's just gone to shield the ball. And it's taken a clip off his ankle. And again, it's just completely wrong-footed Ortega. So, yeah, very unfortunate. So 2-1 is how it was going into the break, I believe. Yes, indeed. City did equalise on the 66th minute. And, oh my good Lord, what a hit by Phil Foden. A very similar goal to the one that he scored in the Manchester derby in March, where he receives the ball on the edge of the box, gets it out onto his left foot and then just arches it straight in the top corner. What a strike. No keeper in the world would have been saving that. And not wanting to be outdone, in the 71st minute, Josko Gvardiol got in on the action. I think I said in our group chat, I actually turned away from this. This was in a group chat to another set of football lads. I actually turned my head away from this as I thought he shanked the ball. But Gvardiol actually caught it and sort of cut across the ball. And it just arched and it just slammed in the top corner. Another great, great finish to put Man City 3-2 up. But the amazing finishes were not done there. As on the 79th minute, Vinicius Junior on the left-hand side spotted the run by Fede Valverde. Just sort of like coming to the edge of the box. So stood the ball up to him with the back stick. For it to hit lovely just on the volley. One of those ones that just sort of like flies, doesn't really sort of spin or anything in the bottom corner. Ortega, no chance. 3-3, and that's how the game finished. So in years past, we've said advantage Manchester City with the away goals rule, but that is not the case in European games anymore. So no advantage to either side going into next week's second leg in Manchester. Andy had gone for a 2-0 Manchester City win on this one with Haaland to get both the goals. Sadly, no points there for Mr. Cook. Matt had gone for a 2-1 Real Madrid win. Goals from Vinicius Junior and Bellingham didn't pay off for him, but a Bernardo Silva strike did. So he does get himself a bonus point for the Silva goal there. I had a 2-2 draw. But neither Vinicius Junior or Bellingham, Jeremy Doku or Rodri got goals, so I just get the point for draw. Hugh had gone for a 1-1 draw. Doku also didn't score, like for me, but Valverde very most certainly did. So Stu gets 2 points for that game. So 2 points for Stu, 1 point apiece for me and Matt, no points having for Andy. And our final game of the week was the podcast derby, where Hull City took on Middlesbrough. Now, obviously, I only watched this from the comfort of my sofa, whereas Mr. Woodmansey watched this from the comfort of his non-padded seat in the south stand.
Correct.
And after 3 minutes, I imagine he potentially wishes we could have swapped places.
I mean, not really, because it would have taken me longer to get home from your house. But,
that is very true. Yes, Middlesbrough took the lead. It looked like an incredibly well-worked goal on the television. And I assume you had a kind of similar view to it, because you sit in the part of the stand that sort of like mirrors the TV angle? Or are you much further round?
My block is directly behind the goal. My seat is slightly to the right hand post as you're looking out. Hull didn't exactly start very well. Middlesbrough were obviously told to go at them early, which exactly what happened. It looked from the stands, it looked a little bit like the ball was just pinging around a little bit. But having seen it back afterwards, the touch into Latela for the opener absolutely was just like it was looped, but it was almost like it was deft. It was perfectly into his path, but I thought his first touch had taken him slightly too wide.
Yeah.
But of course, if you've learned nothing else from this podcast, shoot at Ryan Allsop's near post. Because yet again, ladies and gentlemen, open that door, come on in. Yeah.
So yes, Latte laugh, 1-0, 3 minutes on the clock, or 4 minutes according to Sky Sport. I don't know what it is about Borough, but obviously they didn't do it on Saturday against Swansea. And that maybe is something to do with the fact that they scored the opener literally at the end of the first half. So Swansea didn't have enough time to sort of regroup and sort of get themselves back on track. But Borough scored the opener and then just stopped playing, I felt, and let Hull back into the game.
I would agree with that. It was very similar to the if you miss off the first 4 minutes, it was very similar to the Cardiff game again in the respect that like Omer was just all over the place. They had two chances, one of which was cleared off the line by a covering defender when he'd tried to pick out the top left hand corner. Keeper just stood and watched, but thankfully for Borough there was a man on the line. Greaves had a header save that was a good save. Special shout out actually to Dieng's keeper kit, which was giving me flashbacks to all kinds of David Seaman keeper kits at the time. it was remarked on by a few of us who were watching it there last night, saying how nice but also very retro it was. Then we got to what was it about 29th minute I've got here.
29, according to Sky.
Ball starts to go out the left channel. Philogene whipped in at what was a hell of a cross that Toufan on the night claimed in the stadium, but immediately it came up on everybody's app that he hadn't touched it at all, which also now relates to the goal celebration as Toufan ran off celebrating in the corner. And Philogene and there was another player who was stood and pointed and laughed at Toufan because they knew. And it was rectified actually on the advertising boards. They occasionally flash up the team listings as well, and it did move from Toufan to Philogene fairly quickly on there too. It was one of them. It was put into that area where the keeper doesn't know whether to come for it, doesn't know whether the defender's going to do anything about it. And then it turned out it was too late for anybody to touch it. And it crept in at the back post. After that, City kind of kept going. Which was, again, nice to see. Both teams, though, were desperate to win this game. We haven't really built that up enough. Like, for the fact that a draw just wasn't going to cut it, both teams had to go looking for a winner. And I think that at least the early goal from Borough kind of opened the game up a lot more than it could have, because otherwise it could have turned into a bit of a cagey affair.
That's true.
From a City point of view, it was nice to see another team trying to play it out from the back just as slowly as we often do. And thankfully, we had a little bit of experience in that regard. And the most unlikely goal scorer on the pitch, goalkeeper aside, Jean-Michel Seri, who scored for Hull on his debut and hadn't scored since, picked the pocket of one of the centre-backs receiving the ball for Borough from a shortish pass from the keeper. And Seri then proceeded to be, I don't know where the hell he got that power in his leg, but he tried to take the net off, top left-hand corner. There would have been people sat in the north stand that ducked, that were in the flight of that ball, because it could have gone through. He absolutely wellied it. And that was it. That was on 41 minutes, played out the rest of the first half, into half-time, Hull 2-1 up. And probably even after that, we're kind of comfortable. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I would agree. I think in the second half, Borough definitely must have got a bit of a rocket from Carrick, or at least some sort of encouragement. So I had to say, listen, the game's not gone, but you've definitely allowed them to get back into this one after we sort of set the tempo early doors. It felt like it was not as open as, like, say, like a basketball game was, like where you sort of see it go like end to end and stuff like that. There was a couple of moments where it did go that way, where it seemed to be that both teams were attacking and trying to sort of open the game up and stuff like that. But nothing where I would say like either of the teams were left exposed or anything like that. There was I seem to remember there being a couple of chances where Hull sort of broke through and maybe could have done a little bit better. And I think I even sent you a text. There was one attack that Borough had where they were breaking through, and Tyler Morton tracked his runner incredibly well. He must have tracked him for a good 40 yards and made a bit of a last-ditch sort of sliding tackle where he went around the side. And I believe he took the ball off. I think it was Finn Azaz. But at the time, Borough would have been in. They would have been in behind, and you'd have banked on. In the form that he's in, any ball into Latte lap, he'd probably finished it.
That tackle as well, it was one that he had to get right from the angle that he came in at, and he sort of hooked his leg around the ball, he was very careful not to touch the guy at all, so it was a hell of a tackle. Hull were attacking on around the 70th minute, and doing the usual thing, looking kind of comfortable, playing the ball from left-hand side to the right-hand side to the left-hand side to the right-hand side, and eventually, after touch 6,743, decided that they might go towards the edge of the box. And the ball got played into Tyler Morton, who was perfectly on the edge of the box, and decided that rather than one touch and get it out, or even hit it first time, he needed four touches. After his fourth touch, 8 seconds later, the ball was in the back of the net, but not in a scoring capacity for Hull. The ball got taken off the end of his toe. A really slick move, actually, up between, was it Latte Laff and Azaz? Between the two of them.
I think it was Jones and Azaz played little one-twos. I think it was Azaz that pinched the ball off Morton. Played it in Jones, who then obviously came up and pitch, and he had to. Oh no, maybe it was Azaz, because I think Azaz had to release the ball when he was just crossing the halfway line, because there was a guy that was coming in to close him from the right side, and the defender was going to engage him as well, and he had to get it spot on, and he did. He passed it just at the right time to like release Jones out to the right hand side, who then obviously carried the ball further forward, cut it back to Azaz, who went on the edge of the box, went into the box, drew the keeper, and then just like, did he clip it under him or over him? I can't remember.
No, it wasn't a nice finish. It was a fortunate finish, but you can't say they didn't deserve it for the move that they did. But no, unfortunately, it hit. I think it was Greaves who was sliding in on the cover. That then made it bobble over the keeper.
Right. I have not seen the replay of this thing, because I thought it was a good finish. I thought it was a really good finish by itself.
Yeah. It was from their point of view, absolutely. The speed of the break and the accuracy of the passing up till the point of the shot was spot on. In terms of the defending, it wasn't quite right. If Greaves had got more of a contact on it, it wouldn't have bobbled in. If he hadn't got any contact on it, the keeper might have been in the right place. So it's just one of them. It happens in a game. It's just unfortunate when both sides are looking, like I say, for that win, that then results in them being level. But the next, after the goal, that was on 71 minutes. That was when it turned. Borough seemed to turn it up a little bit more then. I feel like Borough had more of the ball than they'd had earlier in the second half. And that was when the basketball bit almost started, because there was Omer was put through on goal, one-on-one, a good save from Dieng. And then Borough went straight up the other end and had a chance, and it kind of carried on that way until the end. But there was nothing really as clear-cut as Omer being through one-on-one. I have to say, I think the draw, in terms of the game itself, I think the draw probably was a fair result, but it's just not a fair outcome for either side, because now we're absolutely... No. We're not mathematically out of it by any stretch from either perspective, but as Liam Rossini put it best, I believe, in his post-match interview, that we're currently needing snookers is how we referred to it.
Yeah, I think it was one of those ones where I think I'd said it to you. It was neither team could really afford to lose the game, but of the two, Hull would be able to absorb a defeat slightly better than Borough, in the fact they've still got a game in hand. Whereas a defeat for Borough would have completely taken them out of it altogether. But it's the point that neither really wanted. So it's left Borough six. Well, it's left both teams 6 points shy of the playoffs. Borough with 12 left to play for. Hull with 15. So, one result at the weekend. If Norwich lose and Hull win, I mean, obviously, if it's the same for Borough as well. But it does put the cat amongst the pigeons, so to speak. The thing I will say again that goes against Borough is the fact that of the four games we've got left, two of them are against Ipswich and Leeds. So I would be very surprised at this point if we could get enough points to get ourselves into the playoffs. But
and
strange, this is football, strange things have happened, we don't really know.
The aforementioned game in hand for Hull is against Coventry, who are also in the mix and in reasonable form. So that's not a gimme by any stretch. And the last game of the season, God, I hope it don't go to that. Is Plymouth away? Oh, we've also got Ipswich as the last home game. Then the week after that, it's Plymouth, who are in the thick of a relegation battle. And if there's any team that you want to be playing on the last day of the season when you've got something on the line, it's not anybody that's fighting for relegation, because all sorts of weird stuff happens. You'd probably rather have like a comfortably mid-table team that's not really doing anything.
Team that's mid-table, on the beach.
Yeah.
Nothing to play for.
So, but yeah, as games go, I don't think it was a terrible game. It's just, like I say, the result doesn't help either of us, so.
Yeah, entertaining 2-2 draw that at any other point during the season would have probably been quite content with, I would say. Just a shame the context of it, like both teams needing the win to sort of further the playoff aspirations, just tempered it a bit slightly. Predictions-wise, Stuart gone uber negative and had gone for a 2-0 Borough win. Goals apiece for Jones and Greenwood, so sadly doesn't get up any points for that one. I went for a 2-1 Borough win. I had two fans to score for Hull. If only.
You were about that close, about the win of the shirt.
A Nats wing away from points, I would say. I also had Jones to score for the Borough, but Azaz was my goal scorer, so I do get a bonus point for the goal scorer there. Andy had gone for a 1-1 draw, so he gets a point for the draw. Zorori was his goal scorer for Hull. Latte Lath was his Borough goal scorer. I believe Zorori may be missing for a couple of games by the sounds of it.
Yeah, he did himself a mischief in training or in the warm-up, I think. I think he was the one that was training. Matty Jacob, who was due to deputise at left-back, pulled his calf whilst they were warming up last night, so they had to go with a banded together operation of Louis Coyle for 45 minutes and then Ryan Giles for the last 45 minutes, who were both still knackered from the Leeds game.
Yeah, the Ryan Giles one, sort of someone on the middle of the Facebook page put on the fact that he looked completely disinterested. But it was obviously so haven't been paying attention to the fact that he was injured in his last game.
But the thing is, because I'm a huge child, on the post-match interview, they asked Rossini about why he'd chosen to play those two guys for the, you know, was it predetermined that they would have a half each or whatever? And he was like, no, I don't predetermine my subs. Unfortunately, you know, Louis had the injury. He got a shove early doors, actually. Like in the first minute of the game, nearly got pushed into the advertising board. And he was like, he just felt like he couldn't really continue. And Giles has been feeling his groin all week. Dirty boy.
Dirty boy. So just the 2 points for Mr. Cook. Mr. Moore, though, came to play. 2-2 draw. 2 points. A goal each for Zamorri and Jones, so doesn't get any points there, but he does have Philogene and Latte Lamp. So, two more bonus points there. So, Matt got 4 points for this game. Which means, so just so we're aware, Matt's not on the podcast this week. Stu, 8 points from 6 games well played. Mr. Cook, 10 points from 6 games. Mr. Williams, 11 points from 6 games. Missing out on a 12 point from Tufan not getting his head on it, or even his hair. Taking the week with 12 points, Mr. Matthew Moore, who going into the last game only had 8 points. So again, Tufan not getting on the end of the Philogene cross has cost me the week, dare I say. Congratulations, Mr. Moore. You're not here to take the plaudits yet again. Week 37 brings with it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fixtures. The first of which is Mr. Cook's team, Manchester City, taking on Luton. So obviously, Mr. Moore, whilst not here, has provided predictions. And I dare say, is also a Manchester City fan for this weekend. Would it be safe to say? So yes, obviously, Manchester City and his team. He will give his prediction last. I'll just go through mine and Matt's prediction, and then we'll go to Stu. So Matt's gone for a 2-1 win here. Goals apiece for Alvarez and Silva, and the consolation from Luton by Morris. Whereas I've just gone for a straightforward 4-0 Man City win here. Goal each for Silva, Alvarez, Bob, and De Bruyne. Stu, what have you got now for Man City versus Luton?
I think they'll have other priorities this week with the Real Madrid game and back burner, but I have just gone for a slightly lesser 3-0 win. I've got Doku, Alvarez and Greasy Jack Grealish.
Jack Grealish. Go on, Andy, how do you see it panning out for your Sky Blue boys?
Just 2-0 for this one. Haaland and Alvarez to score.
His dynamic duo. Let's hope they can do the business. But not only his team, but also Mr. Moore's team. Our second game of the week sees Mr. Moore's team. Nottingham Forest taking on Wolverhampton Wanderers. It's his team, so he will go last. I've got 2-1 to Forest on this one. I've gone for a goal lead for Gibbs White. Old boy rule. And Wood with Cunha to score for Wolves. Andy, what have you got on for Forest versus Wolves?
This week there's a lot of just get a win. So we're going to see a lot of 1-0s coming up here. And in this game, it's a 1-0. And week in, week out, you boys know that I have got Wood.
Stu?
I agree with Andy. I actually have just realised after he spoke then, I've got three 1-0s in my set this week. This is the first of which, and old boy rule, so Gibbs White.
So three of us have gone for wins. Of course, it wouldn't be the podcast without a little bit of negativity from Mr. Moore. He's gone for the 1-1 draw. Old boy rule for Gibbs White and a returning goal for Hwang Hee-chan, who has been missing the last several weeks, I believe, with an ankle injury.
He's missed the chance to not only have Wood, but also have Hwang at the same time.
And if only Johnson was still there.
Who are we to say?
We better not dick about. Carry on.
Oh no! Don't make a balls up of me. We drop into the Championship for our next two sets of fixtures. The first of which is Hull versus QPR. But before we get to Hull versus QPR, we're going to take a small break. So again, stand by your beds. The inspection is coming. We'll be right back in just a little while.
Recording in progress.
And just like that, we're back again. So as we said, our next game to cover is Hull City versus Queen's Park Rangers. As we go into this one, obviously Hull need the points for the playoffs. But QPR equally need the points to stave off relegation. Oh, actually, no, they don't as much. I thought they were worse off than they actually are. 47 points, so they're still only 4 points clear of the relegation zone. So you could argue they do need maybe another win just to be on the safe side. Obviously, it's Mr. Woodmansey's team, therefore he will give his prediction last. Matt and myself have both gone for 2-0 home wins. We both have a goal for Philogene. I've gone for a goal for Toufan to go alongside that, whereas Matt has gone for a Carvalho strike to go alongside Mr. Philogene. Andy, what have you got now for Hull versus QPR?
I'm not as optimistic, but still optimistic. Just a 1-0. Like I say, there's going to be a lot of just get the win. So 1-0 for Hull. I'm going to keep predicting Sharp until he actually scores, and then I'll pick somebody else. So
He came on against the Borough in our Middlesbrough supporters group chat. It got a collective, oh no, we don't need to see this particular movie. It's been played out several times before, which we had to double down on when Aaron Connolly came on for the final five.
There was an audible boo from the away fans. Seriously, that was quite funny.
I don't think I've ever known a lone player get so much abuse after his loan spell's finished. The Borough fans absolutely despised Aaron Connolly. And the only reason I could think that it was as bad as it was is because he was getting game time more so than Flo Balogun was. And obviously then Balogun went off to, was it Reims or Stade Rennais last season and got like 30 goals or whatever. So the Borough fans were like, for fuck's sake, what's he fucking done here? How do you see it panning out about QPR? Playoffs still on the cards or end of the hopes?
No, I have this thing. I said before the Middlesbrough game, I think playoffs were done for us anyway. I have this feeling now that we'll be all right until the end of the season, but it'll be a case of them draws that series of draws costing us. QPR I've got a little bit of a cushion still, so they're probably about as close to a middle of the table team that we're going to get. So I have got a 1-0, the second of my 1-0 predictions on this set of results. So 1-0 Hull and Toufan to make good on his light touch from the Middlesbrough game and actually get himself on the score sheet proper this time.
Our second to last game of the week sees Ipswich Town, currently second in the division, taking on my boys at Middlesbrough. Ipswich needed the points to keep Leeds off their back and maybe help cement their place as one of the two automatic promotion spots. Borough, again, as discussed, with an outside sliver of a chance of the playoffs. But in theory, whilst not mathematically certain, it could be all done and dusted by the end of this game. Obviously, it's my team, so I'll give my prediction last. I'll jump in here with Matt's prediction. He's gone for a 1-1 draw. Goal apiece for Broadhead and Latte Laugh. Andy, what have you got now for Ipswich versus Borough?
No surprises here. It's a 0-1. And I'm feeling a need for some coffee right now, so I'll take a latte, please.
Stu?
This is the third of my 1-0 predictions, but unfortunately for you, Paul, I've got the home team to win 1-0 with Morsi to score.
Interesting. Any particular reason why you've picked him?
Because he hasn't scored for a few games and thought he might be due.
Not the fact that he used to play for the Borough?
I didn't know that, so no.
Oh, okay. I too have got a Morsi goal in my prediction, as he used to play for the Borough. He only had a short spell. He came in under Neil Warnock. And for some unbeknownst to a lot of the team's reasoning, was sold within the next transfer window, the Ipswich. Strange. Almost felt as if he was sold because he felt he had Johnny Houghton there to do the job that he was there to do, even though Houghton's like 5 years older. Strange, but I too have gone for an Ipswich win. It's one of those ones where I feel that it's unrealistic for us to get the playoffs. I'm now just basically throwing all my support behind anything that doesn't end up with Leeds in the automatic promotion point in places. So if Borough don't get the win here, I'd be happy for Ipswich to win, as long as Leeds don't get a positive result. But if Leeds lose, I'd obviously much rather Borough win. So I've gone 2-1 Ipswich, goal piece for Morsi and Chaplin, and the middle goal obviously for Latte Lack. Which leads us to our last game of the week. Andy's team, Manchester City, turning their focus to their second leg of their quarter-final against Real Madrid. Obviously 3-3 from the first leg, so any positive result either way will lead to whichever of the teams gets it moving on to the semi-finals, where they'll face either Arsenal or Bayern Munich, as was determined by the draw that was done at the quarter-final stage. Obviously, it's Mr. Cook's team, adopted, therefore. Therefore, he will go last with his prediction. I've gone for a 3-1 Manchester City win. I've gone for a goal each for Haaland, Grealish and Doku. The Real Madrid goal, I've gone for Bellingham. Matt, on the other hand, feels that, potentially, we might bring a Spanish flavour to the podcast for the last couple of weeks, as he's gone for a 2-1 Real Madrid win. Haaland to score for City, Vinicius Junior and Rodrigo to get the goals for Real Madrid. Stu, what have you got down for City versus the Galacticos?
I mean, in theory, we could go draw extra time penalties here, couldn't we?
Would treat that as a draw in 90 minutes. Yeah, like William Hill would, and that would be settled as a draw.
Well, I have gone for a Man City win 2-1. Feel like this might go the distance, as I mentioned, but this is probably more because I don't really fancy learning Spanish for the last few weeks of the season. So I've got Haaland and Foden for Man City, and I've got Vinicius Junior for Real Madrid.
Not to potentially worry you, but Foden did come off injured in the first leg. I just remember. Looked like he took a bit of a knock to his ankle. He was looking a little bit ginger on it. He was limping a little bit. But apparently, I think he did do an interview after the game saying that yeah, it hurt a bit, but it shouldn't be anything too serious.
It won't risk him against Luton.
I would imagine not. You'd probably see Haaland, Foden, De Bruyne, probably even Rodri rested against City, against Luton. You'd like to think that City's second team would still be able to put three or four past Luton. I imagine they might have him on the bench just in case they do need to sort of bring him on for the last 10 or 15 minutes if they're chasing the game. Well, that just leaves Mr. Cook to give us his final prediction of the week for his team. How do you see it playing out?
1-0. Like I say, I was just looking at like a lot of these games, it's just get a win. So 1-0 with Haaland.
1-0, Erling Haaland. That brings us to the end of the predictions. Do we have any odds, Mr. Woodmansey, for the Middlesbrough Ipswich Hull QPR Forest Wolves games?
That we do. So, if you were looking for the best result, obviously by which I mean a Hull, Middlesbrough and Nottingham Forest trio of wins, that would get you odds of 16.6 to 1. Not too bad.
Not too shabby.
If you were going for the opposite, an Ipswich, QPR and Wolves win, those odds come in at 19.7, so slightly longer odds on the opposition winning, which is, I don't know, is that a confidence booster? At this stage of the season, it's still a bit potluck, I guess. However, as always, the big money will be with the draws, so all three games to finish in a draw after 90 minutes will net you 42.8 to 1. So, we shall see where that goes.
Indeed, we shall. That brings us to the end of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. As always, thank you to these two lovely gentlemen for joining me to go through the ins and outs of their teams. Obviously, apologies from Mr. Murray, who wasn't able to attend this week, but he did send in his predictions, so good on him. I dare say we'll be back next week to go through, hopefully, a Nottingham Forest win and a Luton loss. Fingers crossed to put some distance between them. Themselves in the race to avoid relegation. Fingers crossed when we come back as well. The playoffs will still be an option for both Hull and the Borough. But I'm not as optimistic, shall we say. Mr. Woodmansey also doesn't sound like he's particularly optimistic. But there's always next year, I think. I suppose one small bit of news that came out earlier today that I think it was Stuart put in our little group was the news that Sheffield United have had a suspended 2-point deduction placed against them for the next time they find themselves in the EFL Championship. I think it's not within the realms of possibility to think that that might be next season. Seems though they are currently bottom of the Premier League on 16 points from 31 games played, and they find themselves a whopping 9 points adrift at the bottom. So they would need to win 3 or 4 at least of their last 7 games to avoid relegation. I think it's safe to say Sheffield United will be starting the 2024-2025 Championship season on at least minus 2 points. The points deduction has been given to them for their failure to pay other teams for their transfer dealings. I believe it said something along the lines of the payments that they'd agreed with other clubs had been deferred for something like 600 days or something like that, and they defaulted on those payments. So I know that there was talk that their financial situation at the end of last season was pretty desperate. I didn't realise it was that bad. But apparently, there was rumours doing the rounds at the time that they were having to close the training ground and stuff like that just to get through to the end of the season. Obviously, nothing ever came about it, but obviously this might be their proverbial chickens coming home to roost, shall we say, at this particular time. So it'll be interesting to see what happened with that. Obviously, they'll start with at least minus 2. There may be some sort of transfer embargo put on them if their accounts can't be put in good working order. But we'll wait and see. That could be very interesting because obviously normally when you've got your three teams coming down from the Premier League, they normally are installed as the heavy favourites to go straight back up, as we've seen this season, with three of the top four being those three that came down from the Premier League last season. Be interesting to see what happens when the three teams do come down in that regard.
So there we go. Them, it's only 2 points in it this time for them. It's not like it's like a minus 15 or anything.
No, no, that is true. It's a manageable points difference, and obviously one win gets them back into the positive points bracket, so it's not the end of the world. But
Unless you're from a Sheffield United persuasion, and then I'm sure it'll sound like the end of the world to anybody who they'll talk to for the first two or three weeks.
Quite possibly. I think it's more the sort of the fact that it just sort of puts like the negative emphasis. Like before you even get the ball, you know you're at the bottom, and like all that sort of jazz as well. But we'll watch this space. We'll see what pans out. But like I say, as always, thank you to these two gentlemen. Thank you to you all for tuning in and listening and watching us for another week. Join us again next week, where we'll come to you all over again with news of Middlesbrough, Hull, Nottingham Forest, and Manchester City again? Or possibly even a la Madrid. This is the point of the podcast where I probably should have prepared like a Spanish goodbye. Adios!
So there you go. I think we did it. I think we managed to do Matt proud and keep us on the straight and narrow. Big thank you for watching. Big thank you for being here. Big thank you for being a part of the CookieCast crew. If you want to be a bigger part of the crew, subscribe. Be a real crew member. If you want to help out, click that like button. If you want to help out more, share the podcast around. Why don't you leave us a review? Say, hey, I love it. 5-star. And check out the website, thecookiecast.com. There we've got social media links and an email button, and that way you can get in touch with us. That is it for this one. Join us next week as we'll be reviewing the games just gone and previewing more football. Until then, I'm going to say bye, and I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.